This is the Vet Alumni Podcast with Tech and Prem.
Vet Alumni Podcast. I'm Tech. He's Prem. We're just a couple music producers talking Philly sports.
That's it.
We had a game on Sunday night.
Quite a game. I don't think anybody was prepared for the type of game that turned out to be.
No. I mean, listen, it was another one of those moments where you're watching this team and you're saying, I know they're not a very good team, but I didn't know they were this bad. I didn't know this is what our quarterback, our franchise guy, looks like now.
He had a very bad night, obviously, one of the worst nights of his career.
It was brutal.
With that said, luckily, you're playing against the seventh-round quarterback taking his first NFL snaps
as a starter. Yeah, right. This guy.
Ben DiNucci. And, you know, if that was Dak Prescott, then the Cowboys win that game by 20 points. They have a 20-point lead at halftime.
I was about to say, that game might have been over at halftime against Dak Prescott.
With that said, we're 3-4-1 going into the bye.
Yeah. I mean, the trade deadline came and went. No moves were made. Jim Schwartz, by the way, called Jim Schwartz out, called him to the carpet.
You did.
And he really pulled off a good game plan. Pressure was put on DiNucci. He looked like a rookie.
He did. And the fact that he's calling blitzes with some defensive backs.
This defense looked better than they've looked. Brandon Graham is having a career year. Guys are just looking good. T.J. Edwards
came out of nowhere. Shot out of a cannon. Made 12 tackles, I believe. If T.J. Edwards is not on that field, maybe the Eagles do lose that game, because even though it was only 9-7 at the half and the defense pitched a shutout in the second half,
he saved a touchdown. Ezekiel Elliott was going to be gone.
I was going to say as well, the Cowboys, even though they have a seventh-round quarterback coming in here, they still have maybe one of the most talented trio of wide receivers in the NFL.
Absolutely.
You have an all-world running back. You had a couple of linemen. They had a couple offensive linemen that got back onto the field.
Right.
You know, all the pieces were there. They got some defenders back as well. So, and they still could not break 10 points.
I'll tell you, Ben DiNucci is as bad as it gets. When I think about bad quarterbacks that I've seen, especially play the Eagles, where the Eagles defense, like Falk last year with the Jets, that game.
Yes.
Oh my God,
It's a laugher.
That was a laugher, and this should have been a laugher.
It should have been. And
this,
you know, with that said, if everybody remembers from last week, we predicted a 15-point Eagles win on this show, and it was a 14-point Eagles win. And it's a game you play four quarters.
Right. Okay.
You like that.
So the final score, if somebody didn't watch the game, they didn't see it, they see the final score, it would be like, oh, the Eagles dominated.
I know.
But it's like, we should have scored 30 plus
points.
That's
what a defensive score does for you.
Yeah. And by the way, the Rodney McLeod, the scoop up and run in if the ball squirted out, normally, that would never go our way. That would be a call that's blown dead right there. We might get it back, but we're not. That's not a touchdown.
It's funny you bring that up, because as I'm watching the game, I'm saying to myself, who is the white hat in this game? And I look, and it's Jerome Boger. And Jerome Boger is a veteran of NFL officials. He's probably one of the longest tenured at this point, because a lot of new blood came in, a lot of old blood left, and they now work for the TV networks.
Nice.
As the like Terry McCauley, for example,
right.
Super Bowl referee multiple times.
Yep.
A lot of times, when you have an old school white hat ref like that in the game, I viewed it as Jerome Boger was giving the Cowboys lineman a chance to rip that free in the scrum and letting it go and letting an old school football play transpire, because yes, Vinnie Curry had it pinned with one arm, but he did not have two hands on the ball and they were both jostling for position.
Right.
That's an old school scrum, and Jerome Boger, being an old school ref, let them play.
He did, and it was fascinating. You just see Rodney McLeod pick it up and run it back, and it's like, well, that's not a touchdown. That's not going to stand. Instantly, it's like, that's not a touchdown. And then all of a sudden, it's like they come out, and they're going for it. It's like, wait, well, hold on a minute. That was a touchdown?
It was like they moved on
from it so fast. I couldn't believe it. I've never seen that happen.
I know. And the other call that did not go our way, that honestly I'm still torn up about and aggravated, was the interception where the guy dragged the shin on the back of the end zone. They called it the interception.
Yes.
Now, I'll tell you why. You can reply. I'll tell you why I was upset. The whole time they're showing us those replays, not once did they show us him completing the process of the catch going to the ground. And the brief time that they showed it, the ball jarred loose as he hit the ground, he picked it back up. If that's a receiver, they are calling that an incomplete pass, and they're ignoring the feet or the knee because he didn't control the ball. And they didn't show that one more time. They gave you a quick glimpse of it, and not one other time on the replays did they show him going to the ground completely where you could see it. Not once.
Right.
Blew my mind.
I hear you. I mean, for me, I was more upset with Carson at that moment.
I agree.
Because, you know, there was no need for that. And when he caught it, it was just like enough. As soon as his shin went, I'm like,
that's a catch.
I mean, this is an interception. Referees are going to call this a catch and an interception.
And it should have been on the idea of the foot and then the knee. I mean, it's as close as it could possibly get. Did the top of his knee, as he fully came down, touch the white a little bit?
It did.
However,
they're going to say his shin touched at the same time right before.
Exactly.
And it's just the principle of it. Almost like he deserves to have that interception because of the effort he put in on that play. And Carson's throw, I mean, that is just.
The problem, though, he just has to do a little bit more, I guess you could say, reconnaissance on himself.
Right.
And apply that a little. He says every week, I got to do better. I can't turn a ball over. And obviously, everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that.
To say that when you're in front of the cameras at the press conference, because that is the professional euphemism for I suck.
Right now. Today just wasn't
right
my
now,
day.
Today wasn't
right
my
now.
Day. We got to do better. We're going to go work harder. All the cliches
you
we've
gotta,
heard.
Yeah, what do you expect?
You play to win the game.
Vet alumni.
At the end of the day right now, we have an average football team that is capable of beating good football teams, but also capable of losing to not good football teams. And they've shown that they can do all of that. This year, we've seen our quarterback play at a very high level, a very low level, and an average level. We've seen everything from this team in terms of performance, good and bad, because there have been moments in games where they really start to roll and dominate, like against Baltimore in the second half. They looked really good against Baltimore in the second half.
I just can't understand why the constant starting slow. It's every game. Every game feels like it's such a drag. Except for the one.
There was one game where they
scored
consistently.
The Giants, right? They scored on the first series.
They scored in every quarter.
They scored in every quarter.
It's the only game this year where the Eagles scored in every quarter.
See, we need to get some better offensive game plans going, and we'll get to that.
We will.
But
and TJ Edwards, phenomenal performance. Have to state it again.
Yeah, TJ Edwards
is a
player.
We have a linebacker.
We have a linebacker.
The silver lining is we're finding all these players that are kind of compensating for our missed draft picks in a way, because the salaries are low for guys like Boston Scott and Travis Fulgham and Greg Ward, and they're just taking the place of draft picks you could have had that are elite players like Dalvin Cook and DK Metcalf, but they're still serviceable in that role and maybe above average in Fulgham's case. That kid is a receiver.
He's a receiver.
He's an NFL receiver.
Wentz back. He is looking to the far corner, and it is caught. Fulgham, touchdown! Travis Fulgham did it again.
Oh my God, we found it. We uncovered it.
This is audio gold.
Oh my God, we found
audio
you were on.
Gold.
You called up Mikey Miss.
Mikey Miss was doing his general knowledge. General knowledge, and I called in.
Yeah.
And I won the general knowledge.
All right, let's play the clip.
Stefan in the great Northeast. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Steph.
What's up, Mike? How you doing,
buddy?
Doing great. Listen, I think everyone just needs to calm down a little bit with Doug Peterson. How good he is as a coach, I think, is really going to come down to how this team performs in November and December. It's a brutal stretch. If that D-line holds true and they're able to maul some people down the stretch, stop the run game, the playmaking quarterback, you know, you're tough to beat in those types of situations.
No, you're right about that. The defense holds. Like, I didn't think the defense was going to be as good as they showed. You know, they were really active, and it was because Schwartz let him fly a little bit. Now, I think he's going to get a little gun shy. He doesn't like to do that because he doesn't like to put his cornerbacks on an island. So, against certain teams, he's not going to be able to do that.
That's true. You know, I feel like everyone just needs to calm down a little bit. Let the guy coach. It's only his second year. But do you want to answer to the two cities that aren't named or two teams that aren't named?
No, I don't, because it's not the category. I got to re-ask that. Yeah, of course. Do you have time to think about it? Of course you're going to get it.
Hey, Mike, you got me figured out.
All right, let's go with your general knowledge questions from the general knowledge category, and here it is. What is the most common first name for girls born in the U.S. between 1933 and the year 2012? The most common first name for girls that long. Wow.
Mary.
Mary's correct. Dude, that's pretty good. Mary.
Vet alumni.
2 minutes left in the third. And they pass longer for the end zone and pulled in by Fulgham. Touchdown, Philadelphia.
Team sort of patient release. Watch him. He's going to get right up on Diggs and then just have the ability to sneak right by him.
It's Wednesday afternoon quarterback.
Wednesday afternoon quarterback, and I mean, because of election day, we had to skip a day. So technically we're recording it on Wednesday, but it's Thursday afternoon this week. It goes back to Wednesday afternoon quarterback next week. But
the time-space continuum is a little warped right now because of the election.
Yes, because of the election, and the whole world is in quite a haze.
What a circus.
But we will stay on topic. So
we will.
And it seems like this whole show this week is about Carson Wentz. I mean, it feels like that for sure.
It is, and you know,
sometimes for better, this time maybe for worse.
Well, unfortunately, you're right, but there's always hope, and I'm going to explain why, people. Carson obviously turned in a surprisingly terrible performance after a very promising week against the Giants. He didn't even look like a game manager level QB this week.
No.
Because by definition, a game manager means you're efficient enough to get by while protecting the ball. He had 4 turnovers, 2 fumbles, 2 picks. Both picks could have been avoided completely. Now, there's different tiers of quarterbacks in the league. You have your elite top tier, guys like Russell Wilson, Pat Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, so on and so forth. And you know, a few more guys. The next tier you have is a franchise quarterback tier, which, in my opinion, is defined as a quarterback with staying power, above average numbers on a consistent basis, and he commands a team that wins or makes the playoffs more so than not making the playoffs. Guys in this category would be guys like maybe Lamar Jackson, Ryan Tannehill, Matt Ryan. And that's probably it for that tier, although Jared Goff is debatable with this level because of their success. The next level is the above average category. Not quite franchise QB, but not quite average quarterback. Guys like Matthew Stafford, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, Derek Carr, who is slowly becoming a franchise quarterback, 4th in the league in quarterback rating, Derek Carr. This is Wednesday afternoon quarterback. On Thursday, after all. So now you have the too soon to know tier. Guys like Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, Teddy Bridgewater. Guys that are trying to establish what tier they fall under.
Right.
And that pretty much, you know, wraps up the tiers. So that leads me to Carson Wentz.
I would actually say that Matthew Stafford might be borderline staying power because he's just managed to be there forever.
They just don't win postseason games.
True.
And that's a franchise quarterback. But I agree with you. It's a murky area
between...
He's
their franchise quarterback. But in our eyes, he couldn't be my franchise guy. But yes, I get you.
So that leads me to Carson Wentz.
Right.
He has the distinct position of at one point or another in his career literally falling under every single one of these categories I just laid out. His rookie season, he fell under the top, to be determined category because it was a rookie year. Still had a pretty good year for a rookie. In 2017, he was elite quarterback of the league. 33 TDs through 13 games. Team had a 11-2 record. Looked unstoppable. In 2018 and 19, at one point or another, he looked like a quarterback who had either fallen off completely, but then also played elite in the middle of all that. Played above average. Played like a regular QB. Played like a franchise QB. And then also played like a QB that should be benched. We've seen it all in the last two years. Now, one thing with all that digested, you have to think about some of these all-time greats at the same point in their career.
Right.
Brett Favre at this point in his career threw 77 interceptions.
Yeah.
Peyton Manning threw 100 interceptions at this point in his career. Joe Montana threw 54. Tom Brady threw 66.
Ooh.
John Elway threw 77. What do all those guys have in common? They all threw more interceptions to this point in their career than Carson Wentz did.
And they're all Hall of Famers.
And they're all Hall of Famers and world champions. Well, yeah, all world champions. Multiple times, some of them. Carson's thrown 47 interceptions at this point in his career when you factor in these 12, which is an anomaly in his career when you look at his career statistics. So my point is today, on Wednesday afternoon, quarterback on a Thursday, Just have some perspective. Last season, December, we had the same quarterback. He willed this team to the playoffs with guys on the field who really had no business playing in an NFL game.
Right.
And he stayed healthy all year. He's been hit more than any quarterback in football this year. And guess what? He stayed healthy this year, too, where you don't even hear the injury skeptics anymore. They kind of they magically quieted down. Franchise quarterbacks aren't easy to find. This was an awful game for Carson. But he led the two touchdown drives we needed to beat a team with a quarterback that couldn't lead one touchdown drive. And that's the bottom line there is you win the game. This is a poor division. And for me, the true determining factor on Carson Wentz as far as where his final landing category is and our categories we laid out will come down to how he plays in the home playoff game that we know we're going to host this January. And then how does he start in 2021? If midway through 2021, we're 3-5 and he's at the same interception rate he is now and he doesn't level out with his normal career ratio, which is top 10 all time, I'd say look to the future at that point. Rash decisions about the future of your team right now in a year where a playoff spot is basically laid out in a red carpet for you, isn't a move. I expect Carson and Doug to come out of the bye week looking crisper, ready to complete the season sweep of the Giants, and that is Wednesday afternoon quarterback on a Thursday.
Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. You know that the numbers don't lie.
Men lie, women lie, numbers don't.
Numbers don't lie.
Look at the numbers.
The numbers don't lie.
Keeping it real. 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 Keeping it real.
Numbers don't lie.
They rarely do, man.
Nah, man.
Got some good ones this week.
Yeah.
All Eagles related this week. You know, last week I did the other around the league stuff, but this is the Vet Alumni Podcast.
Right, Vet Alumni, we got keeping birds.
I'll tell you what, man, I'm impressed with Boston Scott. This week, across the entire league, he was the third fastest ball carrier. 21.05 miles per hour on a 17-yard run.
He is fast.
He's a really good player. You know, it's also worth noting that through the whole year, he has the 14th and 17th most, what they call, remarkable rushes, which mean amount of contact and how much yards you get that you're not expected to get because of the contact.
He gets a lot of those, by the way.
He does. He's very strong, low center of gravity, like Maurice Jones-Drew a little bit.
Yeah.
Runs like a bowling ball. I'll tell you what as well, Tech. This Dallas cornerback, Trayvon Diggs, he's really good, man. He was the fastest.
I wanted him in the draft.
He was the fastest guy across the league this week, 21.72 miles per hour.
Wow.
And that's as a defender. He's also on this list as the 12th fastest for the year across the entire league.
Yeah, I know. He's pretty fast. He did really well in the combine. And coming into the draft, I really was hoping the Eagles were going to go for him.
Now I got one that's going to get you excited. Back to our guy, TJ Edwards.
Ah, Tej.
Across the entire league, had the fastest sack in week 8 of rookie quarterback Ben DiNucci. 2.5 seconds.
Oh, that's tremendous.
It is. He should be starting weekly, like we said.
Yeah, he's a player.
Because for this defense to continue to improve, you need guys like him behind
BG.
He's
their best linebacker.
And that leads me to BG. Also in the top 20 with a 3.61 second sack, 15th in the league this week.
He's a monster.
He is. I'm really excited to see him thriving, you know, later in his career now.
Because he's having that kind of year where he's just playing like he's unstoppable.
He cares.
At times.
He really cares.
Yeah, he does. He's a leader. He's a leader.
And now Carson, in spite of his terrible performance, he still threw two TDs and for some not a lot of yards, but threw two touchdowns.
Of course he did.
And among those two touchdowns was one to our guy Travis Fulgham. Which came in across the entire league as the 13th highest improbable completion.
Huh.
Only a 30% completion probability on that one. That was the touchdown in the back of the end zone.
Which was a great throwing catch.
It was perfect.
It
was literally perfect. And same with the other one on the sideline of Fulgham was a perfect throw. So those two throws, when you look at those two throws, that's the Carson Wentz that we expect to see.
Yes.
That Carson Wentz.
That Carson.
He's been flashing that every week at some point.
He does.
But he's also been flashing bad Ryan Fitzpatrick play.
Right, when you were going through your four stages of the
quarterback tiers,
he goes through all those in a game.
It's remarkable.
In one game,
because there's not many quarterbacks
all
that do that, because Brett Favre retired. Brett Favre would have been the guy that did that as well.
Yes.
You know, and I kind of like that comparison, because it's true. Brett Favre used to do too much.
He never reminded me of Brett Favre until this year.
That's a good point. He reminded me more of like a good Elway in his good year. You know,
okay.
His MVP year reminded me like a good Elway or Steve Young in his prime.
Yeah, I always looked at like he was sort of like a big Ben.
Okay, last Eagles numbers for you. Numbers don't lie here, Tech. This is pretty good, because this is our guy, Javon Hargrave, free agent signing.
He was MIA for a while.
He was, but he's trying to earn his paycheck now, because he registered in what they call average separation from the quarterback. The league average is 4.51 yards separation when the rush starts and the play is processing and the quarterback's going through his reads. Hargrave registered a 3.84 average point of separation.
That's pretty good.
Which is one of the highest across the league this week.
Wow.
I looked at every single next-gen breakdown stat box score for pass rush this week, and Javon Hargrave performed with the best of them. Because you know what, Tech? Numbers
don't
lie.
Vet alumni. Now it's doom and gloom.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Hello, you play to win the game.
Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
That's where I'm frustrated. That's where my whole frustration comes in.
We're talking about practice. Not a game. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
I'm going to tell you why I'm mad.
Doom and gloom.
Storming outside.
I'll tell you, it's because I just can't help it. I just can't help it. All right.
What do you got?
Carson. Obviously, because that's the theme of the show.
It is.
Carson. Listen, man, I still believe in you. You showed us that you were a smart quarterback, capable of playing at an elite level, an MVP level. You not only showed us athleticism, you showed us how cerebral you were as a player. Shades of Peyton at the line of scrimmage, changing the play up, able to read defenses and understand exactly what you were seeing. Since then, there's been three significant injuries, the last one being a head injury. Could it be a factor? If not, then what happened? Was the front office drafting a quarterback in the second round a factor? What about the fact that Frank Reich and DeFilippo left after your MVP caliber year? Could that be a factor? I don't know. I'm just saying. You've been bad. And I'm being polite. The cold hard truth is you've been beyond bad. Below average. A bottom five quarterback in the NFL. Sunday night, your stat line read almost identical to Ben DiNucci's. Ben DiNucci.
Oh, no.
Brandon Graham, who's having the season we've been waiting for him to have since we drafted him, bailed you out after another ridiculous turnover. Look, I like what I've seen from Jalen Hurts, but I am in no way advocating for him to start. But, dude, you've got to pull yourself together. I, like many others, wondered just how many turnovers it would take for Doug to sit you down. Obviously, four isn't enough.
Needed that fifth one.
Especially in a primetime game. Missing throws and taking costly sacks is just the tip. You then go to your post-game press conference wearing a ridiculous hat and proclaim that you won't change your game up, basically saying you will continue to do you. You've been here long enough to know this fan base, repeatedly saying after every game that you've got to play better and saying that you will be better, but then not getting any better. It just doesn't fly here. Admitting mistakes and then not learning from them is flat out unacceptable. But is it all your fault? No. Inconsistent O-line play, practice squad players at skill positions, and injuries have made it extremely difficult for you. Not to mention the play calling. But you can only control what you can control, and the fact is, you need to be better. A lot better. Speaking of play calling, Dougie P., you won us over after everyone laughed when Jeffrey Lurie hired you. You proved the doubters and the haters who were burned by Chip Kelly wrong. You then, in your second year as an NFL head coach, led us to our first Super Bowl championship. And telling Nick Foles, "Let's do it," on the now famous Philly play call was nothing short of legendary. And we not only won, we beat arguably the GOAT quarterback and GOAT head coach. But after the last season and the first half of this season, the play calling is just atrocious. Vanilla. Predictable. Terrible. Consistently not putting your quarterback in the best position. Are you coaching him up? I would assume so. Is Carson not listening to you? Or is he playing hero ball in an attempt to overcompensate for your play calls? You have 25 offensive coaches, yet the offense sucks. How could that be?
Oh, it be.
Again, I'm not ready to say let's fire Doug, but something's got to give. The one thing I can say is that your team plays for you. They fight for you. They'll run through a brick wall for you. And that's fantastic. Usually teams that look as bad as this team has looked week in and week out could be prone to quit on their head coach. To your credit, this team is ride or die for you, man. We're in the bye week, so you have some time to get healthy and put together some better game plans going forward. But make no mistake, we love your aggressiveness. We just need you to be smarter about choosing when or when not to be so aggressive. Lining your quarterback up in the shotgun on 4th-and-1 and attempting a pass play. Really, Doug? We need you to be more creative. The playbook has gotten stale. You can blame that on injuries, but still the facts remain. You must be better, especially because for what it's worth, we still have a division to win.
We do. And you know what, Tech? You're right. We're in the bottom tier of offensive performance. The bottom.
Bottom tier.
We're ahead of teams like, wow, the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins and the Denver Broncos. And
we expect more.
We're actually ahead of Washington, too.
We expect more than just being ahead of the bottom feeders. Because that makes us a bottom feeder. We are a bottom feeder. And
this year we are. This year we are. I mean,
we should not be.
No, we should not be. You're
absolutely
correct.
In every game, there's moments where they could take the game over.
You know, only reason why they have the three wins they have is because of their rushing offense, which is surprisingly good around teams like Kansas City, New Orleans, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Seattle. We're right in that mix in rushing yards. That's why we're winning when we win.
And with that being said, it's time for Prem's Picks.
It's time for Prem's Picks.
Oh boy. So we all know that I went 2-for-3 last week, and if you factor in the previous week, I was 3-0. I'm 5-1 on my last 6 picks, so listen up because these are locks.
Locks!
Now, I went 2-for-3 because we know what happened in Carolina. Teddy Bridgewater takes a weird shot to the head, gets knocked out when they're down by 5 points, and they're driving for the lead score at that point. That's a better's worst nightmare. Quarterback injury. Nobody can prepare for that.
Nope.
Now, would the Falcons maybe still have won? Maybe they would have. However, Panthers didn't cover the -3. But the Raiders went in and dismantled the Browns by 10 points. And, of course, the Eagles covered the 8 points, winning by 14. So here we go. Locks.
Locks.
For Week 9. You know what, Tech? Give me the Bears. +6 in Tennessee.
Ooh.
+6 in Tennessee. They have given no respect to Nick Foles or that Bears defense, which is pretty good last time I checked.
Yes, but Foles has not been great.
He has not, but most people don't realize that the Titans looked very average defensively against rookie Joe Burrow
they
this
did.
Week.
Yeah.
And the Bears have a top three rush defense to address Derrick Henry, and that's the reason the Titans score and move the ball is because of running the ball. Nick Foles should perform well this week, I think. It's a weaker pass defense than New Orleans. New Orleans is top 7 pass defense. That's who they lost to last week.
Right.
In overtime, I might add. Now, the Titans come in ranked in the bottom 8 in overall defense. People don't realize they allow 397 yards a game. Bears are coming in +6. I like the Bears outright to win, actually, in this one. But give me the 6 points. Lock.
Lock.
Next, I want the Cardinals at home off a bye. Kyler Murray to pick up a win over Tua and the Dolphins. Tua making his second start.
Yep, I can see that.
Now the Dolphins mustered a gutsy performance up against the Rams. They benefited from a defensive TD, a punt return TD, and poor QB play from Jared Goff, who was pretty bad.
Yep.
The Cardinals are at home. Coming off the bye, like I said, Kyler Murray's a rising star in the league. He's looked phenomenal a lot of times this year.
Yep.
Arizona's actually 9th in scoring defense.
Whew.
And has Tua coming in. You know, pedestrian showing in his debut. Barely threw for, I think, threw for 93 yards and a touchdown.
Right.
But he didn't look terrible. But give me the Cardinals. That's a lock.
Lock.
Last pick in this trio of locks is Minnesota at home by 4, minus 4 over Detroit. Not only will they cover, but this is actually a 10-point win for the Vikings. This is a gimme line. Coming off an impressive showing in Green Bay, in which Dalvin Cook had a record day with 4 rushing touchdowns.
That was a surprising game.
Their defense played Aaron Rodgers perfectly in the middle quarters of the game. The second and third quarter at home, Aaron Rodgers scored 0 points.
Zero.
The Vikings should handle the Lions. They come in ranked 23rd against the rush, the Lions do. Dalvin Cook's coming off a career day. Indianapolis laid 40 on the Lions in their own building last week.
Whew.
Now they got to go see a rejuvenated Viking team? Lock.
Lock.
So to recap, we're taking the Bears plus 6, the Cardinals Lock. Straight up money line to win,
Lock.
Vikings minus 4 to win,
Lock.
Combo them, win a lot of money. This has been Prem's Picks.
Yeah!
Vet Alumni. 9.